Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 214 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. It seems a very much a case of deja vu once again, sitting here on a Sunday morning. About the defeat and a lack of Everton performance, it's got to be said. Obviously, going to Bournemouth yesterday, a game we all earmarked as one of our away games that was maybe more winnable than other ones we've got on the horizon, and we come away with a 2-1 defeat in difficult circumstances as well, heartbreaking circumstances, given it was Seamus Coleman who scored the own goal. And the manner in which it was scored, but we're going to delve into that and everything in between. And joining us this morning is Max Carlisle. Obviously, Max been on the show quite a few times over the years. And Max, I'll come to yourself first. It's hard to take any kind of positives from that performance yesterday, really, isn't it? In terms of when you're in our predicament, you look for any kind of signs of hope and positivity, even in defeat, but yesterday was more than lackluster, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Morning, lads. Thanks for having me, as always. But yeah, from an Everton perspective, coming off the back of a 3-week break in which they've been away to Portugal, obviously had the internationals, and by all accounts, the Everton internationals, from what I saw over the break, admittedly, I didn't watch, you know, back-to-back international games. I just caught what I could. But it's not as if the lads on international duty played poorly. So you were hoping maybe that they'd come back in and transfer that form. But yeah, it was as if it was just flicking the switch and it's straight back to, you know, the Everton of the last, what is it now, 12 games without a win in the Premier League. And I mean, we were talking a little bit before hitting record about just the way they sort of were moving the ball about and how they actually tried to get at Bournemouth. And for me, it is a little bit rinse and repeat almost. There's not enough movement off the ball. There's an over-dependency on pushing the ball out wide, firing the ball into the box and just hoping for the best. And by all accounts, Bournemouth have been pretty good as of late. You know, talking about winless runs, I remember them going, I think it was their first 9 in the league under Anthony Iraola without a win. But they've turned that round, they stuck with the manager. And, you know, they're not setting the world alight by any means. But if you consider, you know, when they came into the Premier League years back now, they're sitting pretty. And I remember reading before the game that they've, within the last 10 games, that by all, they've got possibilities of breaking their Premier League points total. If all goes well, I think they need to pick up 10 more points, and they've record. They've leveled their record points total in the Premier League. And that being said, going into this game for Everton, you would have thought, with them sitting comfortable in mid-table, that, you know, when things are obscure as they are for Everton at the moment, that they would have come into that game looking to, as we said, really have a go. But it was just rinse and repeat with the same methods of going forward with not much success. And, you know, they've got a centre-forward banging form, having the season of his life, and Dominic Solanke and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, his goalless run extends. But I think when you are on a run such as this, it's just a matter of just putting it behind you and on to the next game, which I know sounds like a manager cliche, but it really is true, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and I think every week we sort of say that, you know, let's try and look forward and not look back. I think obviously the difficult thing is that losing is a habit, as we said previously, and momentum, you know, there's just none of it. That's also an issue, because momentum is a real key thing in football. I think, and, you know, since that win was on the 16th of December at Burnley, to not go, you know, we've now 3.5 months, not far off 4 months really, without a win, it's incredible, really. No one would have thought that. And we've had chances in those games, in the 12 Premier League games in between, to certainly pick up at least sort of one or two wins along the way, and we haven't done that. But I think that the frustrating thing for me is when you watch the game, and you mentioned there about, you know, it's the same, isn't it, all the time. We get the ball wide, and we try and get the crossing as soon as we can, and half the time there's nobody there. And the other half the time, the quality is just not there. Even for, you know, for Beto's goal, I know, Lee, you said to us last night, the quality on that cross wasn't great. Let's be perfectly honest. We've got lucky. Beto put the keeper under a bit of pressure, and we got a goal. And I think it's that. It's the distinct lack of a plan, it seems, in terms of the final third. And when you're down there and you look at results again yesterday, and all, okay, other sides are dropping points. You know, Luton got beat. But you see Sheffield United, obviously, they got a draw. Forest got a draw. But they all seem to score goals, and they all seem to be a threat. And Everton just don't. And that's a concern, Pete, really, isn't it? You know, we mentioned then, Max was saying about Bournemouth, not a great side by any stretch of the imagination. You know, they're picking up wins. They're ticking over nicely. They're going to be safe this season. But when you go in there against the, you know, the defence again for them isn't fantastic, and you create very little, that's a huge concern when you're looking to stay in the Premier League, isn't it?
Well, I couldn't agree more with Max's analysis there. I think we've become very, very one-dimensional. And I think certainly since the turn of the year, teams have fully worked us out. And it was really painful to watch that game yesterday. The ball would very, very quickly go out wide to either McNeil or Harrison. They'd be doubled up on. We'd come back to either Coleman or Godfrey, and then before you know it, Bournemouth have got, you know, 10 players behind the ball. We're double or tripled up on the wings. They know all they need to do is stop the cross. Either best outcome for us is we play for the corner, or it comes back and we try and cross from deep, almost hitting a straight ball at centre halves with Calvert-Lewin on his own, static. And it's just the easiest way to defend. And you know, I think Bournemouth know if they stop the cross, it's going to come back out. And every time they ran at us, you know, we look clueless. But I thought Bournemouth looked so dangerous yesterday, and you could see it was a matter of time. You know, for me, they had the advantage throughout the game because they looked so dangerous when they broke at us, because they were running at pace. They had several options. They were mixing up the play. You know, we didn't seem to have a philosophy either going forward or defensively, really, for me. And I think it's probably, I don't know about you lads, but for me, it's the first time I've probably started to feel properly a bit worried, a bit concerned with what I'm seeing. So I know you were mentioning there, Mike, there've been a couple of nearly moments. You know, you look at, like, you know, the Brighton games, the classic example, where we play really, really well, and you come away thinking, God, you know, we've been dead unlucky, or there's been one or two sloppy moments that, you know, have cost us the win there. But yesterday, we just looked clueless from the off, and it's that sinking feeling where you think, okay, this hasn't changed really over 90 minutes. And we don't seem to have responded. And I'm not talking about changes off the bench. I'm talking about, you know, changes in our approach to the game. We continue playing the same way. And, you know, even when, you know, he brings Beto on, it's still kind of like for like in terms of the game plan and how we're setting up. So it's difficult, really. And I think maybe, you know, Calvert-Lewin and centre forwards have maybe been the fall guys for some of the cracks that we're starting to see, which is maybe about our playing style and a style of play that allowed us maybe earlier on in the season to just counter-attack against teams. And I think we've seen a change now where teams are just allowing us to have the ball. And I think that's probably reflected in the possession stats. I think Bournemouth were really happy. Okay, you have the ball. You try and, you know, get a crossing against us. And when we get the ball back, we're going to run at you. And we know that we're going to score. We're confident at some point that we're going to get a goal against you. And, you know, of course, our record, was it some like 30 games when we've gone a goal down? We've not come away with points from the game. I mean, that's a horrendous record. And again, for me, I think that just reflects the way that we're set up in football matches. And I think we are a very, very one-dimensional side. If we get that first goal, you know, you're hopeful that we can sit on it or that we can then start to counter and the style of the game will suit us. But if we don't get that first goal, it's kind of game over, isn't it? And that's, again, that's not a good feeling to have as a fan when you're in the position that we are in the table.
I think you could have a prime Harry Kane or a prime Lewandowski playing number nine for a Sean Dyche side and you'd do well to get double figures. Literally. With the service that they get, but what they're expected to do as a number nine, you know, the commentator mentioned briefly in the game, didn't he? He goes, Calvert-Lewin, obviously, you know, his woes in front of goal. And don't get me wrong, you know, his finishing hasn't been great, and we know that, and he's well underperforming according to his XG. But still, I mean, you could have one of the best number nines in the world playing in that team, and he would struggle to score goals. You know, the commentator, I think, said, oh, yeah, it was a stupid comment or throwaway comment saying, oh, yeah, Calvert-Lewin had his best form under Duncan Ferguson. He's talking absolute wham, mate. He had his best form under Carlo Ancelotti because basically he was told not to leave the six-yard box and we'll just feed him crosses from everywhere. In other words, we surrounded him with creativity and guess what? He scored quite a few goals. You know, and I said to you boys a few weeks back, what summed it up to me when me and Mike were sitting in the gods at Goodison against Crystal Palace? I think Mike called it the letterbox view from up in the main stand. And literally what summed it up is when Calvert-Lewin ran onto his own flick on twice. You know what I mean? I mean, that's like Sunday League stuff, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's so many things, obviously from a tactical perspective, there's huge issues there. And Pete mentioned it, and it's absolutely spot on. And we've said it before in previous weeks. We've been worked out massively because they know we don't want the ball. You know, and when we get the ball, it's like a hot potato, isn't it? You know, we don't want possession. And we've seen over the last maybe, I don't know, 8-10 weeks, we've had the ball a lot more. Again, yesterday, 51%. Everton win games having the ball about 32-35% of the time. That's what we prefer because we would rather we'll sit, be compact, you try and break us down, and we'll sign it, yeah, sort of, you know, we'll win a free kick, corner, long throw, or whatever it might be. That was what we were doing, and we were doing it fairly well. And I've said this before on previous shows for other channels as well. I don't mind watching Everton play this brand of football or the brand of football under Sean Dyche that we've seen, if it's effective. So when we were winning games, we weren't fantastic. We were just good at what we did, and we were winning games, and we were effective. I don't mind that. The fact we've now fallen off a cliff and we've been worked out. Now, that's a problem. You know, that's a huge problem. But then when you watch the game yesterday, and it's almost as if the players are just don't seem to be too bothered. It seems to be 75%. You know, you look at, I mean, let's talk about the penalty. You know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is clearly fouled in the box, okay? Now, we can all sit here and all say it's definitely a penalty. It's no different to Garnacho against us when Tarkowski brings him down. Why aren't we, at that point there, why aren't we as a collective screaming at the referee? Because Even Dominic Calvert-Lewin almost apologised when he went down, as if to say, oh, sorry, Geoff, yeah, should have stayed up there. Why aren't we? Everyone can see it's a penalty. So if the referee's not going to give it, and you know you've had contact, why aren't we doing something about it? Because we're too nice, we accept things. And if you're a side battling for your lives, which we are, you know, we've got potentially a second point deduction on the way as well. So we're only 3 points clear of the bottom three. Why aren't you screaming for that? What's up with them? Because that's obvious. And that's what frustrates me is that, you know, as a fan base, we've gone through so much the last three seasons. We ourselves have shown our hand, and we've fought ourselves in terms of we pulled this side over the line twice in two seasons. We want something back. We want to see that you care, and I don't see it. And yesterday was the first sign for me. You said it before, Pete, that sort of has brought about some concern in my mind, because I'd seen things in certain games in this run that we've not won in, where I thought we were unlucky there. You know, we could have got that. You know, on another day we win that. You know, the Brighton game, they scored stoppage time, etc. But yesterday, for me, that was almost as if the down tools. They didn't really care. And I'm sure players will come out and, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, it's... I mean, I think Jack Harrison thought that we played well. I don't know what plan they live on at times. I know they have this sort of toe the party line, but they talk utter nonsense. I'd rather they come out and say, you know what? Not good enough. And as a group of players, we've got to address that. And we've got to sort it out for the next game on Tuesday. But they don't hide behind it, because it was clear to everybody. And you can probably tell it in my voice a little bit, because it's very rare that I get overly emotional about defeats, because I don't think it really serves a purpose. But the future of the club's on the line, and I'm sick and tired of seeing players not, for me, give their all. And when Calvert-Lewin went down yesterday, I mean, Max, you know, come in here if you can. What are your thoughts on the penalty incident? Should we be doing more as a team there to get in the referee's head, so then at least then VAR will then go, hang on, let's look at that, let's send him the screen?
As far as the penalty incident itself, I know, straight, because I think Everton, call it Everton Twitter, if you will, at the moment, highlights every little incident like that to the every opportunity they can, you know, and rightly so, to hold, you know, referees and governing bodies accountable. But I hold firm in the belief that you should, as a team, be good enough to win a game of football without depending on soft decisions going your way. And I think what I would rather comment on is what you said following on from that, in regards to how aren't the Everton players surrounding the referee, appealing, sort of making their presence known, which is something that, off the top of my head, is something that I could recall regularly under the days of David Moyes, where you could argue that, you know, Everton had the most spirit, especially in my lifetime. But I think it relates to something that you said earlier on, Mike, in that losing, as we've seen under Benitez, as we've seen under Frank Lampard, losing becomes a habit. And I think to an extent to what it does, it seeps into the mentality. So for when something like that goes against you as a team, there's a sort of conceited nature to it where you almost just accept it. I'm reminded of what James Tarkowski said against Manchester City away, where he said, once again, a decision goes against this club. So I think within the group, that the shared belief that Everton are just up against the cosh in general when it comes to refereeing decisions, when it comes to the whole points deduction fiasco. But as you say, mate, yes, there does need to be a fight or desire of some kind shown on the pitch in order to try and get us out of this situation, which unfortunately, looking at the running, I think it is going to be solely dependent on those games against the likes of Forest, Brentford and others.
I think I said on the podcast when we first got the points deductions back in December, The team is on a knife edge. It'll go one or two ways. Either it'll be woe us mentality. Yeah, I mean, everyone's after us. and the team could fold on the back of the United result, that is, or it could go the opposite way, where they could use it to galvanise themselves and try and go on a bit of a run. Now, fortunately for us, it was the latter. It wasn't immediate, because obviously United got a win, but if you remember that night, it was a worldie and United weren't great, and we were probably unfortunate not to get a result, unlike yesterday. And then we went on that, obviously, that run, which culminated in us sadly going out on penalties against the Fulham side. Again, we probably should have beat. Since then, as we know, and we're constantly reminded of, we haven't won a game other than obviously in the Cup. I mean, that's just frankly not good enough. It's not good enough. And we're now in that mentality. You bob on there, Max, with what Tarkowski came out of. He almost broke ranks, didn't he, as if to say, everyone's after Everton. Another decision goes against us. Now, this happens to all teams, and you're right to highlight it. Whether we like it or not, that's no different. That penalty yesterday was no different to Garnacho's against us when Tarkowski stupidly stuck his foot in and gave away a stupid penalty. Minimal contact for a pen. You could probably argue Calvert-Lewin maybe delayed his reaction going down to the ground, whereas Garnacho probably timed it a bit better, if you want to call it that. But regardless, that should be going straight to, I believe it was Michael Oliver in the VAR, who's obviously supposedly the best referee we've got. That is the level of consistency. However, that shouldn't mask the performance yesterday. You know, Pete, you've mentioned it. Mike, you've referenced it, the performance against Brighton, where they obviously scored a last-minute equaliser. But if you cast your mind back to that game, we weren't great that game either. We had an XG of 0.29 that game, and it took a centre-back to score a worldie from 20 yards out to get us in the lead. Don't get me wrong, Brighton weren't great either. It's not as if they deserved to beat us, but we weren't fantastic. However, you look at West Ham, where we probably, the last time I can remember, we actually had a proper go in the second half of that game. And David Moyes rightly came out and said, don't know how we won that, but we somehow found a way to win it because we got sucker punched on the counter. The problem I've got with Dyche at the minute is ever since that we've been, you know, the appeal, the hearing, we've been waiting to find out what the sanction is. He's pragmatic anyway, but he's been so pragmatic, it's almost beyond belief, almost like trying to play for a draw in the vast majority of games. And I genuinely think going into that match yesterday, a nil-nil, he would have been happy with that. But we need to start winning games. If we somehow manage to, you know, win two games right now, I genuinely think we'd be safe, not in terms of the points total, but in terms of, you look at the teams that, for example, Luton have got to play, well, they had to play Spurs yesterday, and they almost got a result, by the way. They've got to play Arsenal, they've got to play City in the next three. So arguably, Arsenal are going to beat them comfortably, you'd imagine, and so would City. So if we somehow manage to get two wins this week, if we manage to pull, that would pretty much psychologically pull us away from from everybody else. Now, obviously, we're waiting for another points deduction review. But the confidence boost that would give the lads. Dyche should have been going into that game yesterday, arguably not playing for a draw, not trying to be, you know, OK, look, let's just try and get a nil-nil and hope we nick it. Bournemouth, as bad as we were, Bournemouth weren't great either. And then the difference, like you just said, Max, was probably a centre-forward who scored 15 goals this season in the league. And he buried his chance. You know, Calvert-Lewin had you'd probably say a chance not too dissimilar, and it was an easy save for the keeper. I think Dyche, for me, he has to be braver. Braver in the way, you know, we're not just relying on set pieces and trying to whip in crosses from 40 yards out, but braver in things like his substitutions, for example. You know, he's going to have to say whether he likes it or not, and he's a kid, Ashley Young, you're not coming on, mate. I'm going to throw Chimiti on to see if he can do something. You know what I mean? Oh, I'm gonna stick better one at 0-0, not at 1-0 when we go 1-0 down. I'm gonna stick better one, and we're gonna try and chase this game and get in front, get our noses in front. Instead, he makes that better sub as soon as we go down. He's got to be braver. He has to be. We can't be trying to nick games here and there and then bemoaning like little decisions that are going against us. You know, and I felt for Seamus yesterday. I really did, because it was his first game back in a while. overall, I thought he played pretty well. And then I'd probably put the blame on Pickford, if I'm honest, because he's clearly shouted, come, and then stopped, and then it just bounced up and hit him on, you know, awkwardly on the chest. But the point still remains, I don't know what you think, Mike, but I genuinely think Dyche now has got to be braver in the way he sets us up and in his substitutions as well.
It's whether he's got it in him. That's the thing, isn't it? You know, have we seen anything different? You know, since he's been at the club, we've gone five at the back sometimes, haven't we? Which is work now and again, you know. But in terms of, you've got to, as a manager, you've got to instill the belief in the players that they've got the ability to go and win a game of football. And even if you do go 1-0 down, don't let your heads drop. Let's believe in what we're doing. As I say, you've got the ability. Let's not change the focus, and that's to win the game. But like you say, if we're setting up to go to Bournemouth to draw a game, and that's the mentality, then that's a problem, isn't it? Because all of us would rather see Everton go there and have a right good go and lose by 2-1 than do that yesterday. Than, you know, didn't really create a great deal. You know, a couple of chances for Calvert-Lewin, maybe, you know, one he should have probably done best with, the one that the keeper saved. But besides that and the goal, there was nothing. And it's a problem when you don't win games. The players do lose belief. Of course they do. That's a natural thing, because I'm sitting there as an Everton fan. I'm sure we're all the same, thinking, where's the next win going to come from? We can all sit there and say, well, we've got Burnley next weekend. So what? They're scoring goals. They'll tear us apart, because we don't look particularly solid at the back as we did in the earlier part of the season. And we can't score. So if we go behind to them, do we think we're going to win the game? Well, probably not. As fans, we sit there in the ground and we sort of know that. But the manager, I mean, the substitutes absolutely baffled me. The Ashley Young one, unless Harrison's injured, baffled me. But even then, we're 1-0 down. Like you say, roll the dice. Bring on Chimiti. You know, go 4-4-2 earlier. Why? What's Ashley Young? Looks like a competition winner at the moment when he comes on. I don't know. He doesn't offer anything at all. You know, did he get booked, get his usual booking pretty early on from when he come on? You know, two nibbles, and then in the end he brought the man down. And he just, I don't know what he offers aside now. I really don't. And when you're chasing a game, how can your first substitutes be Ashley Young? I understand that the Corey one for Gomez, the Corey I thought was really poor again. But not Ashley Young. Beto and Chimiti. At the time, I said to you lads, Chimiti and Beto were sitting on the bench with the coats on. They hadn't even warmed up. And we've got Gomez and we've got Young coming on. And it's just, I don't understand the manager's mentality there, how we're going to win the game or get a goal back by making those changes. So we've always been sort of very pragmatic when it comes to our approach with Sean Dyche. And we've seen, as I said earlier on, in this run of games where we haven't won, we've seen positives and signs that we can turn this around. Not yesterday. And it's on the players, because I think the players hide. And the players, you know, Max, you mentioned about this. There's almost this victim mentality running through the club. And we, you know, we're probably to blame as well, ourselves as fans. You know, you see when Calvert-Lewin doesn't get the penalty, it's a conspiracy. Everything's corrupt, blah, blah, blah. You know, the points deductions, things like that. When that sets in behind the scenes and within the players and potentially within the coaching staff and the manager, and you're constantly feeling hard done too, you don't win games of football because you feel sorry for yourself. And that's a problem. And the manager has got to get into these players' heads and say, listen, lads, we're 3 points above the bottom three with the game in hand. The destiny, okay, there's potential points deduction on the horizon, but the destiny's in our own hands, isn't it? Because we've got to play four of these sides who are down here. Got a game in hand, we can pull ourselves away, like you said, Lee. You'll get a couple of wins, and you're away from things. And the shift in mentality, then, not only on us but on play on sides around there, is massive. But you just don't see when it's going to happen. You look at the own goal yesterday. We've got back to 1-1. Probably didn't really deserve it, but you would at that point. You go, let's take that point. Only Everton could then not deal with a cross. It wasn't a great cross. You could hear Pickford call for me. That's what I think. I could be wrong. It might have been the fans shouting keeper, but I heard something. And you can see he goes, he steps back. That creates uncertainty, because then Coleman then sort of steps away. What can he do? What can you do at that point? You know, but we can't sit here feeling sorry for ourselves and constantly thinking there's a conspiracy for, you know, during every single game and everyone's out to get us. It's up to us to go out there and win a game of football. And that comes from the manager. And we can't sit here constantly defending Sean Dyche when he puts that on the field yesterday and expects that style of football and those tactics to win a game in the Premier League, because it's not going to. It's beyond boring. It's certainly not creative. And that side hugely lacks belief, you know, and that's an issue. But
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm sure you boys will agree. At the end of the day, a team is a reflection of their manager, aren't they? Once they've been in there long enough and they've had the claws on the team and they've been able to, you know, bring in players they want, and I know that's been hindered slightly, whatever with PSR. But right now, we're a Sean Dyche team, aren't we? The way we play, the way we set up, the way we play, there's no real patterns of play. Are we trying to create overloads out wide to try and feed it, you know, a striker who's good in the air? No. Are our fullbacks getting down the pitch, getting to the byline, creating overloads? No. Are we trying to play through midfield? I don't know. I don't think we are, generally. I think a lot of the passes tend to be square and backwards. And then if you look at the stats, I think Pickford was our most creative player yesterday in terms of, you know, him hitting the centre forwards. You know, it's that in itself is ridiculous. So essentially, we're a team that's setting up just to knock it around for a little bit, not have any width, try and hit our centre forward from 50, 60 yards away, try and keep the game tight and maybe nick it on a set piece. That's basically what we are right now. You know, and it's horrible to watch. It's absolutely horrible to watch as a fan. Look, I'm not saying right now needs must right now, and we maybe need to play, you know, maybe be a bit more pragmatic and things like that. But that game yesterday, like I said before, was there for the taking. You know, Bournemouth, as good as they've been this season, their home record isn't the best. They've won a lot of games away from home. And, you know, they weren't really up for it yesterday. I know a few people who went to the game yesterday and said it was absolutely, you know, quiet as a mouse in the ground. I think Phil Hayward, who's been on the show a few times, he came out and said that the players, you know, the talking between the players, it was silent on the pitch. And I don't know what's happened in Portugal or whatever, but we weren't great shakes before Portugal. But that's the first time yesterday, and I think, Mike, you alluded to it briefly in your opening statement, but it's the first time yesterday I felt, are some of these players not playing for the manager a little bit here? Because there was just no intensity whatsoever yesterday. There was a section, there was a part where they had a breakaway on us and we were just jogging back. And then, if you'll probably remember, it led to a shot with Tavernier. And it just hit Dwight McNeil in the midriff and he went, oh. And then just kind of walked to it. Like, it's just like he's playing five-a-side with his mates. Do you know what I mean? Just on the edge of the box. And they just recycled it to Tavernier. He had a shot and it was a good save. I'm why? What's wrong with him? You know what I mean? Where's the intensity? He's just hitting him. He should be sprinting to try and block the shot. And even the goal that led to their first goal, if you look at it, the ball comes out wide to Harrison. He's created a little bit of space. He's rolled it in. I think it's Dom or Decore. It's just a simple layoff back to him. And he gives it straight to them. They end up basically turning the possession over on the back of that poor layoff. And all of a sudden, they're bombing at our goal. Harrison gets shrugged off like a rag doll. You know, okay, they're trying to appeal for a foul. Dyche mentioned it. No, he wasn't. He just wasn't strong enough. But to be fair to Harrison, it was a shocking layoff to him that basically gave them possession. They're suddenly sprinting on our goal. They slow the ball down, so now we've recovered. And they still get a free crossing. And it's a goal. And before you know it, you're 1-0 down. You're thinking, That's just basics of football. A simple layoff from a centre forward to a winger has basically created a chance for them. And 20 seconds later, it's in the back of our net.
Yeah, not even that, though, Lee. I would say okay, every now and again you can have a poor touch or poor layoff or whatnot, but it's the reaction to the following phases of play almost determines, you know, sort of the momentum and the flow of the game. One of the things that I felt Bournemouth did exceptionally well yesterday is, again, as soon as they won possession, there was movement off the ball, players running forward, creating angles to pop the ball off to. If they lost the ball, they were back in numbers quickly, cutting off passing lanes. And one of the major criticisms, I would say, of Everton's playing style during this winless run is, in comparison to, just off the top of my head, I've watched a lot of the likes of Manchester United, Liverpool, Man City recently, is just the movement off the ball is a different level. You watch Everton and everything is so static. And the best example of that is with Dominic Calvert-Lewin in being a lone centre forward. He's just so isolated from the play. And yes, I know Abdoulaye Doucouré didn't have the greatest of games yesterday, which sometimes it happens. But you would have thought, given his recent form against Bournemouth, I think he scored in the last two games against them, that he would have been bang up for it, looking to sort of build on that record against Bournemouth. And usually he creates a degree of sort of uncertainty and chaos to the point where, you know, a ball does slip through to Calvert-Lewin. But obviously it just wasn't to be. And it'd just be interesting now, obviously, with Newcastle on Tuesday, like we're sort of alluding to, what does Sean Dyche do next? Where does he go?
I think you bang on there, mate. With Doucouré yesterday, let's be honest, whether we like it or not, what's Doucouré's main asset? His main asset is his engine. He gets about the pitch. Is he great technically? Not really. Is he a good passer of the ball? Not really. Is he good at making late runs into the box and getting the odd goal? Yeah, definitely. He's not a bad finisher. But his end by far is his asset, closing people down. And when he wasn't in the side, but, you know, when he was injured, we did miss that and we missed his goal threat. Yesterday, he was jogging about the pitch. He wasn't looking to close down with any intensity. And that was from the first whistle. And that's what made me think, like, there just seems a real, like, lethargy in the players yesterday. We looked like a team that was playing the third game in a week, like we did when we played Wolves over the Christmas period, and we just had no whatsoever. We had 3 weeks off. Yeah, we had 3 weeks. We should have been at it yesterday, at it, biting into tackles from the get-go. And it just seemed to be like, just no dynamism, no energy. And yeah, I look at other teams around us, you know, and obviously a lot of them are struggling for results, thank God. But you look at Forest, you look at, you know, even Bournemouth themselves, you look at Brentford, they've got pace out wide. They've got pace. They've got ball carriers who can skip by a man and you know, create uncertainty and you know, basically mix it up around the pitch. We haven't got any pace in that side whatsoever, really, have we? Yeah, when the wingers get it, they just want to come inside. So it's you know, that lack of pace. I know we went all out for Nonto and couldn't get it over the line, and maybe Dyche realised that himself. We've got no tricky wingers or no pace in the side. But it's really starting to show right now. You know, sometimes you need that ball carrier to, you know, to break up, you know, to cause havoc amongst the team by dancing past two players. And we just don't have that, do we?
Well, obviously, we're heading to Newcastle on Tuesday. Obviously, quick turnaround, isn't it? And you talk about players with pace. And Newcastle have that in abundance. But obviously, after what happened yesterday against West Ham, they've got injuries galore, haven't they, in terms of, you know, to some key players. You've got Anthony Gordon, who got sent off, didn't he, in stoppage time, which obviously is great for us because, let's face it, he's in fantastic form. He's flying high. He played for his country for the first time during the international break. Looks in great form. But they're missing a lot of players. And Tuesday is going to be, you know, it's one of the games where you looked at, you know, we're coming into this final 10 games as it was before Bournemouth, where you think, I can't see us getting a great deal from there. You see them turn around a 3-1 deficit against West Ham and win by 4-3, even with the players that they've got missing and the players they lost in the game yesterday. And, you know, this is what I'm saying about what you're looking at. Where's this win going to come from? And going there, obviously, on a Tuesday night, I'm sure the atmosphere will be electric there because of the fact that the previous game. looking at that game, Pete, and despite obviously Newcastle's injuries going into it and suspensions and things like that, do you look at it at a game that we can actually win? Or do you think it's very much going to be a case of if we come away with a point, then we're doing all right?
I think it's difficult to look at it a game that we can win, but I think we've got to look at every game as games that we can win. I think, you know, feeding into the things that we've been talking about on the pod so far around, you know, mentality, losing becoming a habit. I think that fits in with that when you start looking at games and trying to stay in it for the draw. And I do think that could be part of Dyche's pragmatism, can't it? That maybe has started to maybe go against us a little bit. It's not a game that you look at with hope. I know they're coming off the back of, you know, this, you know, phenomenal comeback at home, and we're coming off the back of, you know, coming away from a game that we, you know, we definitely should have got come away with a point. But I mean, sometimes that kind of you know, story of fortune can flip a little bit, can't it? Some, you know, you often look at matches like this and expect the story to continue, but often, you know, it takes a lot physically and psychologically to win a game like that against West Ham. And you know, the hope for us is that we come away from Bournemouth and we learn some lessons, and it's, you know, it's another wake up call, and that there'll be a healthy inquest after the game, and the players look at Newcastle as a chance to put things right, regardless of what people are saying, you know, in interviews and on the face of things. But I think it's reached a difficult point now where you do start looking at every game thinking, I don't think that we can win this regardless of who we're playing. And it's up to the players. You know, the players are the only ones that are able to change that. I think the hope for me is that Newcastle are a team, I think, that will come at us. I don't think they're going to allow us to have the ball in the way that Bournemouth and other teams have done. I do think they're going to look to attack us. So, you know, is there a glimmer of hope there that it does suit our counter-attacking style, that we can try and get the first goal, and then the game becomes very, very different from that point. But it does feel like a slim chance. It does feel like we're kind of clutching at straws now when we're looking at the weeks ahead and the games to come.
Well, cast your mind back to when we played Newcastle back in December. We beat them 3-0. Newcastle were in a really poor vein of form back then, weren't they? They were struggling to get a result themselves. We were hitting, you know, a bit of a form patch, and you know, we beat them pretty comfortably that night. It was a night game, wasn't it? It was a great atmosphere. Beto came on and scored, didn't he, as well, which obviously was a great moment for him. But I just think, you know, not that Newcastle are full. Newcastle got very lucky yesterday. They were 3-1 down, and rightly so as well. West Ham played well. They were clinical. You know, I look at West Ham team, by the way. Bowen and Kudus. Yeah, I don't want to keep on mentioning Kudus on this podcast because it drives me mad, because we should have got him. But anyway, that's the type of player we need in our side right now. You know, I mean, he's got everything that we're missing. But they, you know, West Ham were clinical, and on another day, Newcastle would have probably lost that game, but they managed to turn it around, and fair dues to them, and that'll lift the dressing room. But they're weak at the back at the minute. They've lost their best centre-half in Botman. He's out for the season. Lascelles comes in to cover for him. He went off after 15 minutes. Trippier was injured. Livramento was covering him. He went off injured as well. So, you know, and I really rate him, by the way. I think that Livramento is going to be a top fullback. So, you know, going forward, they've got pace. They've got dynamism. You know, Isaac's shown what he can do. He showed it against us when he embarrassed us at Goodison. Not the last game, but the game before that. So we're going into a bit of a Lions den on a night game there over there, but they'll be weak at the back, and we can exploit it, providing we turn up and put in a much better performance than we did yesterday.
Yeah, of course. You know, any game, you can win any game, as we know. You know, we had, everyone harps back to the Brighton game last season as the moment, you know, totally unexpected, went there and tore them apart, and we're absolutely clinical. We need one of those games to kickstart something. It's as simple as that, really. And is it going to be Tuesday? Who knows? They have got a lot of injuries. You know, you mentioned, obviously, the defensive players there. Obviously, we know Gordon's out. Almiron came on, went off injured, didn't he? Callum Wilson often scores against Everton. He's out, will not be playing in that game. But obviously, you know, they've got informed players. Harvey Barnes comes on, scores two. This is the difference, isn't it? Can, you know, can we look at our squad and how thin it is and options off the bench. Harvey Barnes will probably start the game now against us. He's going to be, obviously, flying high from scoring a couple of goals. They'll miss Jolinson in the middle of midfield, of course, but then you've got Bruno, who pulls the strings. They're a decent side, regardless of suspensions and injuries and things like that. You know, if that's us and we've got that level of injuries, then it really, really impacts. A side like Newcastle, who spent hundreds of millions of pounds in the last two or three windows, it doesn't as much because you've still got quality on show, but it's going to be a really difficult task to go there. I think at the moment, you know, as we said, losing is a bad habit that we're in. There's no momentum. We need something to go our way, of course, as you always do to get out of any kind of rut. You need the players to start believing again. What's it going to take for that to happen? I just don't know. I mean, whether the manager looks, I mean, you look at the changes he made yesterday, Max, and obviously Beto comes on and scores again. So, you know, he scored a couple in his last three games. Now he scored a couple. You know, you look at Andre Gomes came on, I thought he impacted the game, you know, a little bit more than Decore did. Wasn't difficult. Decore didn't play particularly well. You're looking at that, hopefully Mikhailenko back as well, who missed the game 2-0 against Bournemouth. Would you look to those players that were brought on, some of them yesterday, and maybe look to freshen things up a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I stated before that night game against Newcastle at Goodison was an interesting one in that it was almost like a matter of wearing them down until the last 15, 20 minutes, and then we got that barrage of goals. But yeah, obviously, it's going to be difficult because, you know, through their spending, whilst they have sort of periodically gone through their own sort of injury crises to a certain extent, this, as we've alluded to there, there's still very much quality on show at Newcastle. So we do need to be on our guard. And, you know, St. James's Park is a very hard place to go, especially off the back of the result for them yesterday. But yeah, it just sort of goes back to what I said before in terms of just how is Dyche going to choose to set up and approach the game from a tactical perspective, and how is he going to carry out his game plan? Because, you know, as proven for the last 12 games now, it's not working. Because I think if you go back to the two goals that the Bournemouth got yesterday, it screamed out for, you know, we've not dealt with the ball into the box, and it screamed out for, well, if there was another man to plug the space, would Everton have dealt with it more efficiently? So, you know, just taking what you can from that, would it be more efficient for Everton to play a five back moving forward? Because I think especially when you're in a predicament such as this, where, you know, your future in the division is uncertain, it's finding the balance between being hard to beat and scoring goals, and at the present moment, because of the attacking options at Everton's disposal, it might not be what fans want to hear, but I would argue that the way to go moving forward is to maybe just set up and try and be hard to beat, just be disciplined and throw someone else in there, Michael Keane maybe, and as we've known with Michael Keane, obviously he's popped up with the odd important goal for Everton when these run-ins sort of happen. I don't know. I'm just theorising, to be honest. But it's a difficult task. I don't expect Everton to come away from Newcastle with a result. It's going to be hard. As I've mentioned, I'm looking towards the others in and around the relegation zone as where Everton are going to pick up important points.
I mentioned that on Twitter after the game yesterday, actually, Max. As soon as Mikhailenko was ruled out, it wasn't an injury, so I believe it was fairly last minute. For me, I think he's got the wrong decision playing Godfrey at left back and throwing him in. And I feel for Godfrey in a way, like right and left back, when ultimately he's a centre half. And I know he's not been great since he signed, but he's had the odd good game here and there. For me, he should be a far better player than he is with the athletic makeup he's got. But yeah, you know, he's clearly been a victim of his own versatility in some way. But I mentioned yesterday, as soon as Mikhailenko was ruled out, he should have gone with three at the back and played either Harrison or McNeil as left wing back. Probably he would have probably gone with McNeil, because we literally having a right footer down there. You're really doing, and Godfrey, even when he played right back, let's be honest, he's a centre half. He's not going to get past his winger and try and whip in crosses. He's just never going to do that. And look, I understand maybe he went with Godfrey's pace against Semenyo, thinking, well, look, he'll match him up athletically, you know, so you can kind of see that a little bit. But for me, our best performance this season, and there haven't been many, was when we played Villa in the Cup. And Villa have got an exceptional home record. They had going into that game, and they have since been very, very good at home since Emery's come in. And they've had another good season under him again this season. We went there and we played five at the back, and they went relatively strong. Yes, they were pretty much full strength to a point. They experimented a little bit by playing McGinn out on the left wing, left back, and it didn't really work for them. But the point I'm saying, we went to Villa with five at the back, and let's be honest, we more than deserved to win that game. We were exceptional that night. I think they nicked a goal and made it a bit tighter towards the end, but ultimately it could have been three or four, and that wouldn't have flattered us. So he had an opportunity to do that yesterday with Mikalenko going out, and he didn't change it. Now, I mentioned about obviously maybe making the Beto substitution earlier at 0-0. You know, does he even try now and try something different and go maybe with Newcastle away? Probably isn't the game to probably do that, because, you know, it's an away game against a relatively decent side. That's not the time to experiment. But certainly Burnley at home, I think he's just got to go for it and maybe go with Beto and Calvert-Lewin. Just find a way to get them two in the side. Now, if it's 3-5-2, he goes 3-5-2. That's fine. But he needs to find a way. He needs to change something, because what he's doing right now, it just isn't working. And we're not looking incredibly stable at the back, which we were before. And we're not looking a great goal threat going the other way. So he's got to find a way. Now, bringing Beto on at 1-0 yesterday, whilst it wasn't, you know, suddenly we turned in 70, we did look more of a threat straight away. Gomez coming on, like Mike said, came on, got on the ball. He's probably our most technical player. He started knocking it about, left foot, right foot. He made us look a little bit more fluent. So I don't know what you think. I think he's find a way. He's got to change something. He's got to find a way and maybe just go, you know what, we just need a couple of wins on the board just to take the pressure off this and find a way to get Beto and him in the side, and maybe 3-5-2 is the answer.
Potentially a change of formation will do the job. You know, as I said at the start of the show, he's done it before. We haven't seen it for quite a while. But it's, you know, at this stage of the season, it's by any means necessary, isn't it, to get things from games, to get points, 3 points, whatever it might be. You've got to, you know, whatever's going to work. I mean, he probably thinks that his setup now should work, because they've worked on this for sort of 15 months now with Sean Dyche. And in the last sort of 12 games, well, it hasn't, has he? Let's get it right. Bar the odd draw in there, which we said at the time, you know, Spurs, Villa, those kind of games, they were fairly positive. It's not really worked. So what can he do to change it? That's a possibility, bringing Beto, having two up front. That's a possibility, five at the back, maybe so. But he's got to do something. He's got to earn his corn. And I praise Sean Dyche, you know, in the week on The Athletic, you know, and said, same, is he the right man? I think he's handled the whole situation surrounding the club particularly well, that other managers maybe wouldn't be able to do, because he's got very broad shoulders. He's very pragmatic, and he's dealt with it particularly well, because other managers would have wilted under the pressure that is Everton Football Club at this moment in time. And that's the honest truth. But it doesn't mean he's devoid of any kind of criticism, and doesn't mean that he's not under pressure, because he should be, because what we're seeing is not good enough. And going to Newcastle, I hope that they do see some things that fans have written in a way, and they do look at the criticism, and they do look to try and stand up and try and prove people wrong, because they need to start doing that and show us as a fan base that there is something there, and they're willing to fight for this football club as we are and as we continue to do. But let's round off if we can with our predictions for the game. Max, what are we saying?
This is a difficult one as far as predictions are concerned when you're on such a bad run, mate. I'm going to say it'll be a draw. It would please me to say, this fully comes from not expecting a win, but it would please me if it was a 2-2, because at least it shows that Everton have got the score and boots back on. But I don't know if that's too much of a big ask. But I'll say a draw, 1-1, 2-2.
Pete?
I'm going to say we're going to lose 2-0 in the hope that Everton do what they usually do and prove me completely wrong and somehow go and get an impossible win.
Late.
Ever the optimist, Pete. Ever the optimist, mate. It's hard to say right now because, like I said, Newcastle, like I said before, have got some key injuries out and they will be weaker at the back. It's whether we can exploit that and have the quality to exploit that when we get the ball, because they're going to have more of the ball. I'm going to say 1-1. I think it'll be a draw. But we do need to find something, like you said, maybe a Brighton moment somewhere, Mike. You know, we do need to find something. But look, just before we finish up, and there's been a lot of talk around it, and I've probably been a bit like you, Mike, a little bit of a defender of Dyche and the fact that, you know, theoretically we should be on 31 points right now without the points deductions, and we have had some good performances this season at times. There's echoes a little bit of Moyes in the way he plays in some ways. But right now, guys, let's say we do hook or by crook stay up, and new owners come in, whether that be 777 or whatever. Would just individually there, would you keep him in the summer? Pete, you go first. Would you keep Sean Dyche in the summer?
I think I was more worried about the prospect of the new owners, to be honest. That I honestly think it's too early to call, and I think the whole situation's that mad and crazy. You just can't predict. You know, if it is 777, which it looks highly, highly likely, you just can't predict them. But I think that they're a complete enigma at the moment. And in a weird way, if we stay up, I'd almost like Dyche to stay for the stability. I don't think I'd like to see new owners come in and Dyche be sacked and a new manager come in, but that would be a great problem for us to have right now. So I'd be more than pleased to be worrying about that in the summer. I don't know about you lads.
Max, what do you think?
I would probably echo what Pete said there, and that, and what Mike said earlier, and that since Sean Dyche's come into the club, he's been a fantastic figurehead for the chaos that's been going on behind him. But this is just purely from personal preference. I don't like the brand of football. I've grew up watching, you know, the top sides in Europe play possession-based football, knock it about well. And there have been certain times over the course of my life where I've seen an Everton side do that. And that's always the brand of football I'd like to see Everton play. So maybe keep Sean Dyche for the present moment due to just the obscurity of the whole situation. But I would like to see Everton Football Club looking up by the time they get to the Bromley Moor Dock.
Mike?
It's a difficult question, really, isn't it? You know, but I think it's always very emotive after a defeat like that yesterday as well, because, you know, it was the manner of the defeat. It was, you know, the start of football again. People thinking that we've gone away for 3 weeks and then done nothing. You know, the mind just saying we had one day to actually prepare for the game. And, you know, it's difficult. He's got to earn the right, you know, to be manager of this football club. And, you know, it has been chaotic, of course it has, and I've given him immense praise for that. But I think when the new owners come in, which will happen one way or another over the next, you know, whatever that might be, but assuming that we do survive and we do, you know, we go into the summer, you do wonder whether they pull the trigger and bring their own person in. Whether that's the right thing to do, I don't know. I think you could go one way or the other and you wouldn't know if it's going to work either way. You really wouldn't. You know, Sean Dyche does seem to deal with a lot of the off-the-field things particularly well. Does that then mean he gets a free pass? No, most definitely not. Does it mean at the moment that if Everton could potentially afford to relieve him of his duties, they would do? Maybe, because we've gone 12 games in the league without a win. So, you know, Lampard and Benitez have done you know, less than that and went. So you just don't know. You know, it's a difficult situation. The owners, I mean, if it's 777, which potentially it looks like it's going to be, you know, do they seem the type to just accept that? Probably not, but any new owner wouldn't do. Any new owner will want to progress and do better. It all depends how they see Sean Dyche. So the answer is I don't know. And I don't think anyone knows because the club is in that much chaos really anyway. We can't answer the question, to be honest. But it's another question for the next few months, isn't it? In what has been an absolutely chaotic season for a lot of Premier League clubs, you know, and let's see what happens.
It's really interesting listening to all three of you there because you've all kind of given a very similar answer. And I think a lot of it is around the fact the real instability around the club right now in terms of who's potentially taking over. Are we at risk of administration? You know, I think we are more at risk of administration. I think a lot of people actually think as well, you know, having to constantly borrow money for our own working capital. For me personally, it's a really tricky one as well. But I just think with the way that we're playing right now, with the distinct lack of patterns of play and everything else, if we do stay up, and he's done a good job to keep us up last season, by the way, and it will be a good job with all the points deductions, all the foire around the club, he'll do phenomenally well to keep us up again. With a clean slate, and if we could get the right manager, I personally would change it in the summer. Personally, I look for example how brave Bournemouth were changing it, getting rid of Gary O'Neill, who did a fantastic job by all accounts. They bring in a guy, you know, a lot of the fans were against it, and you know they're on 38 points right now. Yeah, I look at Villa, who under Gerrard, the biggest fraud going, by the way, but it was dire and, you know, effectively relegation under Steven Gerrard, bringing a manager of the quality of Unai Emery. And look at the turnaround there in that football club. Now, don't get me wrong, they've spent money as well. But it just shows you, if you can get hold of a top manager, I believe, which Emery is, who was never given a fair crack of the whip when he came here with Arsenal. But if someone of that ilk was available and we could grab him, you know, look at Brighton going after the Zerbi, for example, and things like that. But, you know, I personally, if anything like that was available and we had the funds to do it, you know, I'd be all over it like a rash. I'd be all over it like a rash because this style of football right now, whilst it's working, well, is it really working? It's hard to say, but whilst it's having its place in where we are as a football club, it just shows you what a top manager and someone like Emre can come in and completely transform your side, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, as I say, this is a question that will be answered when the new owners come in and we see what the lay of the land is at the end of this season. You know, we know there's a lot of off-the-field stuff still ongoing in terms of the ownership and things like that. So it's going to be, you know, time will tell. Time will tell. And the most important thing now is he's not going to go currently. I think that's obvious, you know, to everybody. So if he's not, then we get behind him. We try and yet again pull this side over the line for the third season on the spin. And then can we reset in the summer? That's the big question. That's what we need to do. Can we reset? Can we then look to enjoy our final season at Goodison Park and look forward to moving to Bramley Moor? That's the big thing. But a lot of questions to be answered, of course. But that's us for today, you know, with Easter Sunday. I think it's, you know, those who are religious, go and say a few prayers before we go to Newcastle on Tuesday. That's all I can say. Hopefully a positive result on Tuesday before we're back at Goodison Park in what some may term a winnable game, but what's a winnable game this season for Everton when Burnley are in town. So we'll be back ourselves next weekend to look back on what promises to be a pivotal week for the football club yet again. Isn't every single week a pivotal week, but we'll be back ourselves next Sunday, so we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.